It's the final the World Cup hosts and PSG owners have been dreaming about. It's Messi versus Mbappe, or is it Messi versus Griezmann? This is Le Classique, and we're previewing Sunday's final between Les Bleus and Argentina. So hi everyone, this is Tom from The Classique, joined as always by Beppo. How are you doing, Beppo?
Oh, great, mate. Excited.
Yeah, congratulations to Les Bleus for reaching their second World Cup final in a row after 2018, obviously. So the last time we were on, we previewed their game with England, which we thought would be tight, and indeed was. And since then, of course, they've beaten Morocco in the semi-finals. I guess we'll start off this episode by thinking what we've learned from the past two games. What do you take out of it in terms of France's performances and their chances for the final on Sunday?
I mean, we talked about before the England game about their weaknesses, and I think it was interesting in the two games how those were sort of flipped over in a way. Mm-hmm. So we'd identified prior to the game against England that the back four was going to be targeted. And it was, and it suffered quite a bit. I mean, it held up, but it suffered, whilst France's attack was just clinically efficient. Mm-hmm. Whilst I feel like in the semi-final against Morocco, it was really the standout performers were the back four and Lloris, really, and I think Ibrahima Konate was and Varane were immense. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that, you know, we identified those weaknesses. We still felt like we saw them, but they gradually sort of became less and less worrisome. Whilst on the opposite side of the pitch, I think it's become a little bit more, not difficult, but less fluid as it was before. But that's also down to the fact that the opposition got better than at the start mm-hmm. of the tournament, I think.
You know, and obviously, Le Classique, we're based in the UK. We have lots of UK listeners. I think the reaction in the UK has been a little bit one of maybe a missed opportunity. I think a recognition that England played really well and pushed one of the best teams in the world all the way. I mean, how has the reaction been in France, at least to that first victory against England? My sense is a real respect for the opposition and a feeling of being a little bit lucky of having gone through that game at least in 90 minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we talked about it before the game at how the French press and I think French fans did respect the hell out of that England squad. And there was a real sense of relief after going through that. I think objectively you can say that this was the most even of the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
And the most hard fought and between two sides that didn't have a lot of weaknesses, even though we'd identified some clearly.
Yeah, yeah.
So at the French end, it was a sense of this was the real first test that we had to face. And we faced it and we won in the same way that maybe we did against Belgium in 2018, or of having our backs against the wall. And sometimes mm-hmm. you just have to execute the basics. It's not going to be pretty. And ultimately you might have to rely on big moments from big players. And that's all that you need to get through. And I think that's where the experience of the team, but also in a way of like being a fan of France over the years is, you know, it's not always going to be pretty. You know, you're not always going to be the best playing side on the pitch, but ultimately what matters is where you are at the end of 90 minutes. And more often than not, they turn up with a win. So there was relief, but also I think genuine joy at seeing the sort of mental fortitude and those big players able to turn up with those big moments mm-hmm. and delivering.
Yeah. The Morocco, there was always the question mark in the Morocco game is what happens when they concede first. And this couldn't have been a worse start for them, though, in terms of conceding to Deo and Lloris so quickly. I think, I don't know, it's interesting, the general feeling seems to be that Morocco played quite well in that semi-final. Yeah. Of course, they had quite a lot of the ball, some chances, but I always felt in that game that France were kind of in control of it, you know, and that at some point they would break and get the second goal in the way that I felt they weren't comfortable against England.
Yeah.
I think when they were really, sometimes in that second half in particular, really suffered until they got their second goal. So then my impression was that the semi-final, I think, has been, I don't know, described a little bit as, again, not quite an underwhelming performance by France, but France just doing what they had to do to get through. And I thought it was really them actually holding Morocco at arm's length, diffusing the atmosphere, which of course was impressive. So Morocco playing essentially as a home side at this competition. But, you know, as much as they were maybe a little bit fortunate to go through the quarters, I thought the semi was kind of France doing what they kind of do best now.
Yeah, and I think it's also because there was genuine surprise that the reaction from Morocco after they went behind, you know, you go behind in the 5th minute in your first World Cup semi-final. With all due respect to a number of those players, they're not necessarily used to playing those stages in competitions. You know, Unai, who was immense, Boufal, you know, they're very good Ligue 1 players. But unlike Ziyech, for example, it's not like they've reached a Champions League final or a semi-final. Or played in those high intensity, you know, highly emotionally charged games. So I think the reason why people maybe looked at the semi-final performance with the view of France didn't necessarily turn up and deliver is because there was that surprise, the really positive reaction from Morocco. On top of that, they also lost the heartbeat to their side in Saïss going off, and Agger hadn't played, and because they still created chances. There was a view that it was clinical from France, but really not very impressive. If you're just going to leave the ball to Morocco, then what does that mean about your ambition? But I think that's looking at it totally the wrong way. I think the early goal played right into Deschamps' plans. It helped his players focus on being solid and kind of actually saving their energy because France is not going to press high. That's not their game. That's never been their game. They don't want to play that game. So it fit right into their plans and they were efficient. But I think you also got the sense that once they were able to string a few passes together and play out of pressure, then it was inevitable that they would get goals and beat Morocco.
Because obviously we've talked a little bit about how I guess these two past games have confirmed a little bit about what we kind of previewed before the England games, the stuff that we know about France already. Has there been anything, do you think, new or different that we've discovered in the quarters and the semis? I mean, I think our big preview of the England game was, of course, kind of, you know, Mbappe, this being Mbappe's World Cup. And actually, he's been fine in these two games, but he hasn't maybe been the standout performer. And actually, maybe for France, and indeed we had this in our intro, that maybe it's actually Griezmann who's turned out to be France's key man, arguably, at the World Cup. Let's see how the final pans out. But
He was the standout player in both games. Griezmann, he was immense. He turned up in the big moments, whether defensive or going forward. I think for me, it's more a case of sort of reassurance in a way. You know, there were genuine question marks over midfield and defence. You know, I think Tchouaméni has really grown into his role, but sometimes it felt a little bit like it could pass him by. And with Rabiot, I mentioned this a couple of times. If he goes well, the team goes well. If the team goes well, he goes well. But if he, you know, if it's all negative, everything's negative. And the main question marks were around Varane returning to form. I also remember weirdly discussions before the tournament about, and maybe not in French papers, but about is Varane really a defensive leader? Can he, you know, before he had Umtiti, who was the enforcer. And at Real Madrid, he had Sergio Ramos. And, you know, he hasn't been utterly convincing at Man United. I think he's answered those critics. And I think Hugo Lloris has answered a lot of critics. Tends to have moments where he's a bit shaky with the ball at his feet. But for France, he's always been supreme, frankly. Yeah, I mean, we'll remember the second Croatian goal in the 2018 final. But, you know, he was.
But the game was won more or less,
Yeah, and he was good in the quarters again. He was very good in the semi-final. He was good against Poland, and much like he was excellent in 2018 against Uruguay and Belgium. So it's that sense of reassurance before, and certainly against England, it felt like you'd go into a lead, and well, the other side is going to claw their way back. They're going to have some really good chances to claw goal back. Against Morocco, it was stretched a couple of times. And I think deflections, sometimes we got a bit lucky, but I never get this got the sense we were truly, truly overwhelmed. I was a little bit worried about our left-hand side because Mbappe was not doing any tracking back. Again, don't know whether it's down to instructions or not. And Fofana was having to do a lot of work to cover, but never truly felt like their main number nine was going to get through and score. And their chances came from set pieces or one or two balls into the box. And that every time Varane and Konate were immense.
Yeah, I do want. I'm just speaking of Griezmann. I do wonder one of the reasons why he's so come. So few elite teams in Europe in the past, whatever club teams in the past 5, 10 years have played kind of really low blocks, being comfortable out of possession, except of course Atletico.
Yeah.
Now, so this is he's someone who's so used to, yeah, we can still be a top side, but play in this way, right? Whereas I think lots of his teammates in France, another one maybe being kind of Real Madrid a little bit. In certain ways, but he's so used to playing a kind of quite a low block,
Yeah.
making the efforts out of possession. The transference, I think, to international football, which can be very different for certain elite players. For him, maybe the transposition to what he knows best and where he's been best
Yeah.
to the France team is maybe quite a natural fit compared to other players where the transition can be tougher.
And it's his composure on the ball, which even getting out of sticky situations just outside his box, which I find so impressive. And I don't say that as in he always tries to play the right way, etc. He's just has a natural calmness to him in a role which isn't necessarily super familiar to him. You can see when he was named as basically France's number eight for this World Cup, you could see he had the attributes, physical, mental, technical, in terms of discipline, and it's been drilled into him, and I think it's been drilled into him even before Simeone, playing in different positions, and as we'll go about it, his background. But you could see that he had all the assets, but you still have to turn up and perform and actually do it and make your team fluid. And he's been the connecting piece in midfield. His defensive work has been amazing. He's done it very calmly, and frankly, he's been an 8 out of 10 at every game. And again, he's delivered in the big moments, Against Morocco, it's his run that leads to the confusion in the box. Against England, it's his cross that he delivers onto Giroud's head, and so his impact. What I find really, really impressive is that his impact can be felt throughout the game over the 90 minutes, and in those tiny little moments, which is maybe not necessarily what you would say about Messi. Messi has earned the right to walk a little bit across the pitch to find those pockets of space and deliver that moment. Similar with Mbappe. With Griezmann, it's over the whole game and it's tactical. I mean, his fouling in the first half against England was smart. He,
Yeah, that's
you
learned
know,
under El Cholo,
he,
right?
he, he took his yellow for the team. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was breaking the rhythm. And just whether it's good or bad times for France, he's there, he's marshalling and he's managing the game for France. He's at the heart of everything that happens for that front side, in the good, the bad moments over the 90 minutes, and in that specific moment. And that's why I think he's been with Messi the player of the World Cup.
So I think I know you want to do a longer piece on his career because it's a really interesting one at the kind of the end of the episode today. But in terms of previewing the finals, what's interesting to me is I think we have a clearer sense of what France's lineup is going to be than Argentina, right? Who have been more experimental. But just a couple of things on selection. So Konate for Upamecano, was that injury enforced? Was that selection after Upamecano's poor performance
That
against
was
England,
illness enforced.
illness
So
enforced.
Rabiot and Upamecano fell ill off because of the allegedly because of the overpowered air conditioning in the hotel.
Are they sharing a room? Are they
I don't know whether
roommates?
they, but interestingly, since then I was seeing today, so we're Friday the 16th, and the news in the Équipe that Upamecano and Varane were feeling unwell with a similar sort of symptoms. So if it's true, whoever's working the AC
Need
better
to
get a
get
handle on
this.
it. But so no, it was slightly forced upon Deschamps. But again, I think what was amazing, I know we're going to preview the final, but what was it super impressive for me was that somebody like Ibrahima Konate, who's played in big games, but still has limited experience for France, to be mentally and physically ready for this sort of game in, in a lot of adversity. I mean, the crowd was
Definitely.
definitely following one team. It's you could get caught up in the moment. It's, a very good team against you that had the upper hand for a lot, a lot of the game in terms of possession and looking dangerous. And he was superb from the first minute. And to a lesser extent, I think Youssoufa Fofana also deserves a lot of credit because he started in a, in a role. He's looked a bit shaky coming off the bench for France at this World Cup, much like every sub that came on for the Tunisia game. He didn't exactly call himself in glory. And I think he had a, I saw L'Équipe marked him as a 5 out of 10, which I think in any British paper would equal a 7. And I think that's fair. And there's no shame in that. It's, I think he had a very solid performance. There were a couple of times where he drove with the ball and destroyed the Moroccan midfield. I don't think we saw Amrabat for a single second of that game. To be able to be ready, I think those players deserve a lot of credit. And again, the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit because you've got to keep those players involved. You've got to keep those players focused, and you've got to keep them to have this mental readiness, of going to the similar to Nzonzi in the 2018 World Cup when he came on for Conte. It's, hey, Stephen, at one point we're going to need you. We're going to have to rely upon you. And he turned up and delivered
Or
like those two players did.
Frank Leboeuf in the 1998 final.
Exactly.
There's a bit of a theme
Exactly.
emerging here. But would you say so? So are these players, they're real doubts for the final, given this bloody essay where they
Yeah,
staying?
I don't know,
But
but
you'd imagine, I suppose, that it would be Konate, given their performances in the semi. And then in the central midfield, it will be interesting to see.
I think in the central midfield, if Rabiot's fit, Rabiot will start. I think he's earned it. I think Fofana had a good game, like I said, but Rabiot was in the England game. Rabiot's more experienced. I think for I'm not I'd be more surprised if there were to be a change there. I think the Upamecano Konate debate is a really interesting one because Upamecano was really good in the first few games, and actually when he played in the first game with Konate, Upamecano for
Was
me
the better of the
was
two,
the better of the two, but also kind of managed Konate through the game, kind of took the sort of elder statesman role, which I thought was quite interesting. But certainly, he had a tough time against Kane, which is no shame to anyone because I think Kane is one of the best number nines in the world. And Konate had an excellent game, although he wasn't facing someone of Kane's caliber. So, I think it's a difficult one. I think, what we know about Deschamps is that he's loyal to players who have performed in tough times for him. And I think that's what you see in international football. We've seen that with Harry Maguire for England. It's, hey, that guy's always delivered for me. There's no reason why he can't, and there's no reason why I should stop trusting him. So that if that's the thinking, Upa and both are fit, Upamecano will start. But in terms of form, I wouldn't. I think it's a genuine 50-50. It's Konate was so good against Morocco.
I think Scaloni, of course, has kind of rotated his system, and to a certain extent, his players also a lot more from kind of very narrow 4-4-2 to kind of 3-5-2, 4-3-3. So I think it's hard, I guess, for us to predict what might come out of that. I mean, what does strike me is that it's two teams that aren't obsessed with having the ball and that are comfortable letting opponents have it and looking to kind of to break in transit. I mean, Argentina did that brilliantly in the semi-final against Croatia. Yeah, France, we know how they can do that so well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how this one plays out a little bit. I mean, what are your thoughts? Are you expecting one team to dominate the ball? And are you expecting quite a cagey affair? I don't think this will be a kind of 4-3 replica
Sure.
of the last time these two met. Teams met at the
Hey,
World Cup
if it's a 4-3 for
for France
France
with
and Koundé does a pavard, then I'm very happy for that. But I completely agree with you. I think there's no team that's going to take it by the scruff of the neck. So certainly that's the way it presents itself as a game. I think they're also both teams in a way that have play the most to the essence of what international football seems to be like, which
Yeah.
is be organized, show solidarity, show composure, although against the Netherlands,
It's a
that was
20 minutes
questionable,
of, yeah.
but show composure and find a way to get your best players isolated for the big moments. And so that's what we've seen with Messi. I think that's what we've seen, certainly what was attempted tactically as well against Morocco with Mbappe, where he was staying up. And the question that was being asked of Morocco was, are you going to leave this guy on his own on the counter? So I think I think both teams have no shame in admitting that. It's ultimately we're working to get our best player on the ball, creating something out of nothing. The Where it makes me a little bit more positive for France is that there are more than one option. And with Argentina, there's obviously Messi. And I'm not saying that as lacking respect to all those players, because I actually like that with 90s throwback midfields. But is the magic going to come out of someone like Alexis Mac-Allister or Enzo Fernandez? Well, the magic might come from not just Mbappe, but Griezmann, but Dembele, if he finds his footing again.
So that's your feeling that France has more maybe players that can pull something out of the bag, which is
Yeah, who can deliver a moment. Obviously, the greatest player to do that remains at this tournament, Lionel Messi, clearly. And he's surrounded by very good players. It's not an anomaly that Argentina are there. But in terms of seizing the moment in what's going to be a cagey affair, France might, it could be seen that France have slightly more weapons to turn the game on its head out of nothing than Argentina do.
And that, yeah, because we were sort of also prepared before this episode, preparing a kind of team of the World Cup, and we, for the kind of number nine, we were hesitating a little bit, no, between the two nines that are going to be playing in this game, which is Giroud and Alvarez, which of course offer very different qualities, I think, but offer similar mentality in terms of guys that are playing up top, but that are not individuals and they're actually sacrificing themselves for kind of other players in the team, but not so much at the detriment of their own stats this World Cup. So both of them, I think, have four goals. But yeah, interesting. I typically see what you were saying in terms of these are two teams that actually, in some ways, share a lot of similarities in terms of really nailing what international football is like.
And interestingly, I think those two strikers you've mentioned have the exact set of skills that will make it difficult for the other side's centre back partnership. So Giroud's smarts and physicality against Otamendi
Who's
and
smaller and
Martinez,
more right? Yeah.
who suffered against Weghorst. And Giroud is a smaller man than Weghorst, but he's a much more talented man than Weghorst. I don't think anyone would mind me saying that. Whilst Alvarez is running at Varane, to a Varane, Upamecano, and Konate, it's probably some they would maybe much rather enjoy facing somebody like Giroud than Alvarez, especially with Messi dropping off and finding those pockets which will require Tchouaméni to be really disciplined when he's not a six, he's more of an eight, right? So I think that's also what's going to make that battle really interesting.
Because one of the advantages I was thinking that France might have is in terms of sort of height and physicality on set pieces. And that strikes me. It's true that those two centre backs that you mentioned are not tall by centre back
No.
standards. At the same time, I feel Martinez is very good at going and claiming crosses on the whole. No, also got any.
I mean, they're both Argentinian centre backs. They are both really aggressive, and they'll put their body where it hurts. And actually, I'm quite happy for Lisandro Martinez that he's had a really solid World Cup because of all the flack he got at, dumb pundits who, after two games, say he can't handle the physicality of the Premier League, where he wasn't bought just for the physicality; he was bought for the smarts. But yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting contest because the midfield, the center of the park, isn't necessarily where those. I don't get necessarily the fact that this is where the drive necessarily comes. Obviously, we've talked about Griezmann, but if I look at Argentina, is this really where the drive comes from? I mean, McAllister's done that, has done that well. I think I've continued to be impressed by him. He's been impressive for Brighton, but it's another step up, you know,
Definitely,
to
yeah.
do it. But it's not the same. Again, this is where I think, like I've said, just the man to create the moment. I see it more on the France side than on the Argentina side.
Okay, so what are you feeling? So last time, I think when we previewed the game, you got it right, no? So I think I said 2-1 England. I
So
think you were
2-1 with the heart.
2-1 France. What would you, if you were to put your head on the line, what are you thinking for this?
My heart and my head do say France will win it, but you know, you are facing one of the greatest players to have ever played this game, who's been on a mission and who's been so singularly focused on this that it feels like everything, you know, every obstacle he's faced it down, you know, and we've seen that at previous tournaments. You just need that single-mindedness and that great player to deliver for you, and that might be enough. And they have everything else that they need for that to be the case. They've already shown it. So, you know, again, heart and head say France have a better chance of winning, let's put it that way. But at this stage, with the players that we're facing, you know, Argentina would be deserved winner, and I can see how they would win it.
I can kind of imagine a kind of 2014 World Cup repeated a little bit. I know it feels a bit like that, but maybe going, no one would begrudge the GOAT a World Cup medal, no? And then we can maybe get rid about these boring debates about whether or not he is the greatest. I just hope that if it does go Argentina's way, that we have a messy moment to crown it off.
Exactly. All I want, if Messi is to win it, if Argentina were to win it, is for Messi to turn up, deliver something, and Argentina not to be total dicks.
Right, rather than Paredes scoring the winner from a deflected
Yeah,
20-yarder.
and to be fair, I thought, you know, I'm not saying that because of the because of what happened on the shootout with the Dutch. I think it was a the Dutch and the Argentinians seem to have played some of the worst games at international tournaments in terms of bad blood over decades. But certainly, when you see the likes of Paredes turning up, you know, you don't want play, you know, that a player like that is not a particularly likable
Not at all, no.
player, and there's a certain attitude that we've seen with certain sides that can grate. So I'm hoping the worst aspects of what would traditionally be associated with maybe Argentina will not come on show. I'm hoping that if they are to win it, then it's because they play really good football, like they have, to be fair, at most of this World Cup, and one of the geniuses in football turns up and get a moment to actually deliver for his country. I have to say, if France do win it, you know, anyone who says that this is, you know, the defining point for Messi's career, I think that would be so disrespectful to his career, because ultimately, even if they end up losing, he would have played what, four World Cups and delivered two finals to his country. That is not negligible at all as an impact. So no, all in all, hoping for a good game, for no VAR crap controversy and no bad blood, just a really competitive game and the best team wins.
I think one thing we haven't discussed yet is, we discussed Morocco playing as a home side. Argentina have had a
Oh,
huge amount of support, also out in Qatar. And I think they will be the team feeling like the home team, I think, against France.
their support has been amazing. I mean, it must be government chartered planes at this stage. You know, inflation is hitting like 80% in Argentina, and yet they packed the stadium with like 60,000 people. But it's been an amazing movement from the Moroccan fans and the Argentinian fans, and it's been actually, they've brought the atmosphere, because the rest of the tournament's been pretty dull in terms of the stadium atmosphere. But that can also work. Sorry, that can also work
In
for
France's favour,
France,
yeah, because
you
maybe
know.
that will force the Argentina to go on a little bit, and France can do that.
And it's a young Argentina side. It is. It's obviously they won Copa America, which is, you know, it's the equivalent of winning the Euros. Any international competition is difficult to win. So they've got to say their inexperience would be at that level is would be unfair. But it's still, the occasion can still get to you, and how who are the leaders who are going to marshal that team in the tough times, potentially through the finals. You're going to have difficult times. Whilst for France, even someone like Kylian Mbappe would be like, guys, second World Cup, okay, backs against the
We've
wall,
been
we're
here
there.
before.
Griezmann, Varane, Lloris, Giroud, all those guys, they've been there, and they've been and they know what it, and they've demonstrated this tournament that when their backs are against the wall, they do tend to deliver more than not.
Should we talk about your man of the tournament so far, which is Grigri
Grisou.
Grisou? Why do you think he's been? I guess we've talked about what he's done at this World Cup generally, but why did you want to highlight him in particular? And I guess his not only what he's done at his World Cup, but his career more kind of generally.
I think it's because we've talked previously about Giroud breaking the goal scoring record for France and finally maybe getting the recognition at an international tournament that he deserves for his career for France. With Griezmann, it's two levels of recognition. It's one recognition within the France squad, and not that people in France didn't respect or appreciate Griezmann, but he did come into this World Cup with a lot of question marks around his position in the team. When he was transformed into a number eight, it felt as much an indictment of the lack of options available to Deschamps as to the aura and influence that Griezmann has on the side, and so it's about his recognition within the France squad, but also now recognition on a global stage that actually a player who's been playing for France since 2014, his whole career for France has basically been France's most sustained successful phase in its football history, and I don't think that's necessarily a coincidence. And now people outside of France are maybe realizing that this is a man whose career on the international stage rivals anyone's over the last 20 years. We're talking about top goal scorer, player of the tournament at Euro 2016. Scorer, man of the match in the 2018 final, and I think what is it called, like bronze boot or whatever it's called, as the best player at the tournament. He's been immense at this World Cup, and was man of the match in the semi-final. Could be one of the clutchest players to have played for France over the last 20 years, and I wanted to look back a little bit upon his career because of that, because it seems that finally some people have sort of stood up and taken stock of what his career is like. And there's this realization in and outside of France of, holy crap, what a player he's been.
One of the things also when so obviously his breakthrough came not in France but in Spain where he's played his whole career. So breakthrough at Sociedad that he goes to, of course, because he struggles to find a
He's too
team. He's
small.
too small. He struggles to find a team in France that will take him on and
Doesn't speak Basque.
right.
Doesn't speak Spanish.
But
Leaves
goes
his.
there as a what a how old is he?
He leaves when he's 14, I think, 14, 15. And like I said, doesn't speak Spanish, doesn't speak Basque. Not that it's as prejudicial at Sociedad as it might be
Well, he wouldn't have got, he wouldn't have got
Athletic.
into
Athletic.
Athletic for obvious reasons.
It feels like the start of his career was always a little bit in the shadow of someone else as well. So, he wins the 2010 Euros under 19 for France, is part of the team of the tournament, unsurprisingly. But a certain Gaël Kakuta wins it, not and by the accounts at the time, not necessarily because he is the best player, but he's the biggest player at that moment in time. And it feels like in Griezmann's career, there's always this sense that he's the underdog, and no matter how well he performs, that image doesn't really leave him. And the only time where that's left him is when he moved to Barcelona, And you
Where
know,
ironically, maybe he has the worst pet. I mean, it's because it's not like he was terrible at Barcelona. That's the
no.
thing. And we think a bit about maybe the worst patch of his career, but certainly in his second season, it's actually when you look at the numbers,
Yeah.
it's fairly decent. But there's always the thing that maybe, yeah, obviously his favorite position at the time was kind of in the Messi territory, you know, which is
Yeah.
cutting in a little bit on that kind of right-sided attacking position, and then just trying to find his time. But I think what you say about him being a kind, the humility, being an underdog, sometimes it's kind of, if you were to follow football from afar, a disconnect between his image, which is quite, he's always changing his hair,
Yeah.
he's interested in fashion and his appearance,
La décision.
La Décision, this sort of, have you seen
No, of course not. But it's like the American
it?
documentary.
But
I
that
refuse to watch it.
But there's this disconnect a little bit between how he played, maybe a little bit like someone like David Beckham, in the sense where the
Yeah.
public profile is of a certain type, but then actually the player on the field is one of total sacrifice
Yeah.
and devotion to
To the
to the
cause.
team, yeah, and to
Yeah.
the cause.
And it's interesting because even in France, that we saw that evolve over time. So, you know, when he started at Sociedad and then came through at Atletico just as he was bursting onto the scene for France, you know, Euro 2016 in France, where he was the main man, well held by Giroud, but he was the main man, scoring the big goals, you know, turning up with big performances. You know, he was the ideal son-in-law. That was the picture of Griezmann. You know, look how humble he is. Look how hard he works on the pitch. The reason why he's been able to deliver at Atletico Madrid is because Simeone has drilled that into him. Although you could argue that leaving your home at 14 to go to a foreign country, you know, live with quote unquote foster parents in a different culture and make your way to professional football that way would build your determination. But then once we moved to him going to Barcelona, and then post 2018, a little bit of iffiness around the France squad with Benzema and stuff like that, and things didn't necessarily go that way. There's nothing more than fr that French fans there's nothing that French fans love more than breaking than a fallen idol, and it felt a little bit like it was veering in that direction of, look how arrogant he is. He's in every advert. You know, it's a very French thing. You know, he's all interested about the money. La décision, you know. Look how cocky he is. And now it's flipped back to, actually, Griezmann has always been the same for France. He's been that really humble worker who has the balls to step up when needs be, and who's never shied from going to the France to play for France. Unlike, say, someone like Rabiot, who in 2018 said to Deschamps, you know what, don't even count me in the reserves, I don't want to turn up, I'm not here to work during my summer. You know, and Griezmann, it's 116 caps, 42 goals, third highest goal scorer, most assists for France. I think he's been involved in 15 goals at World Cups or international tournaments for France, and finally getting the recognition that he is just a wonderful footballer who has the right attitude, and he's demonstrated it yet again.
And we often think of it being, a natural move for maybe forward players to move back a little bit, but it's not easy to do, like
No.
the Rooney experiment was never really totally satisfying. I'm just trying to think of cases here. Where it's where, I mean, you could think of maybe Messi eventually. And I think that has actually happened already.
Yeah.
For PSG, he's dropped a
For
little
10.
bit. 10, yeah,
Yeah, but he was
exactly.
doing that at Barcelona as
Barcelona
well.
later on also. And it shows the intelligence of the player to be able to do that. I mean, the other thing, of course, with Griezmann is that you have to associate his international career with Didier Deschamps. And to me, they go totally hand in hand. And you were mentioning earlier about how, of course, Deschamps is a bit of a loyalist. Now he has players that he'll be willing to stick to
Yeah.
at all times. But do you think this is his guy for that you associate with his time as international manager of France? Because they almost overlap, no, perfectly from kind
Yeah.
of
Yeah.
2014 onwards. Of course, you'd have some other
Yeah.
candidates, maybe Giroud being one. Or,
I'd say yes and no. Yes, in the sense that he, even when there were a few touchy moments over, let's maybe say, the last 2 years in particular, yes, Deschamps has shown loyalty, or but that's what it leads to know, is that for France, Griezmann has always made himself indispensable. I can't think of a particular sustained period of time when he was coming onto the pitch and you were thinking, this man has no place in this starting 11. He's and that's also kind of what I wanted to make sure that it's understood, is he has been at a top international level for 8 years now, for a side that's been uber successful in that period of time, and he's been in the top three players. So, you know, you could look at somebody like Lloris, record number of selections, captain for so long, etc. Maybe one of the most influential players in a way under Deschamps, right? Name me Deschamps' top three in terms of influence. Griezmann's definitely going to be there. And you look at somebody like Pogba, who had influence and has had unfortunate injuries, but you always felt with Pogba, it's more fleeting and it's more, you know, in the traditional accusations thrown at Pogba, it's also about his spirit, which, to be fair, he's always demonstrated for France.
Front,
But for Griezmann, it's the total
but
package.
you know, would you say that Deschamps probably takes the title? I mean, he must be France's most successful international manager, no? Over so multiple final, you know, two finals, final of the Euro, final of this World Cup, winner of a World Cup.
He might be one of the winningest people in football ever.
It's true.
As a player, what was it? Two Champions League finals, captain of France 98 World Cup, captain of the Euro 2000 winning France side. As a manager, I know it, people will see that as a lesser achievement, but in France it's not. Led Marseille to their first title since the 90s, which, when you consider what a particular environment that is one big achievement. And then for France, I mean, what else is there to say apart from he's played, what, five or six tournaments and he's been in final at least three of them. If your hit rate at international level is a final every other tournament, I think you're doing something right. And I can't quite think of many managers who've done that. But also France over the last 8 years he's led, and certainly over the last 6 years, right? We're not talking about Spain from 2008 to 2012.
In terms of just
In
the
terms of
players and the
talent
talent, yeah. And
and the
coherence.
culture is already there, and you pick from two clubs, and that's pretty much, that's pretty, I'm bastardizing it, but that's pretty much it, and of
Only
course,
a bit.
of course, I'm dumbing it down a lot, but when you look at the difference between his 2018 side and this side, including in terms of starters. Including in terms of starters who've just only recently come into the fold, and players who've had issues with him in the past. You know, Rabiot has not always had fun with Deschamps. Dembélé, I think we mentioned it last time,
Definitely,
started in 2018. The first game was so atrocious that he didn't play a single minute of the rest of the tournament.
That's
And it felt like his time with France had left, even
even
after
the
you know.
Benzema Giroud situation, how that's been managed.
Yeah, you know, Giroud could have come in, you know, dragging his feet and turned around and performed, but also kind of said, you know what, F you, Didier, should have always been the number one. And yet, everybody's come in. How many combined caps do you Upamecano and Konate have? You know, Koundé is accepted. Koundé's been bought as the best centre back in Spain by Barcelona, and he's been asked, much like Thuram was, and Pavard to a lesser extent, he's been asked to play as a fullback. And he's performed. Yeah, he's had difficult times, but he's
He's done
performed.
his bit, yeah.
So I can't quite think of too many managers who developed this esprit de corps over a sustained period of time with such a high turnover of players.
Has there been, I just wanted to finish the episode a little bit by talking about the future of this both Didier Deschamps and Griezmann. Has there been any sense of whether this, I mean, it's a long time to manage any side, this might be his World Cup, particularly if France end up winning. And if so, he's not so old, Didier Deschamps. He's still youngish for a manager. Might we see a return in club football for him? Another thing I'm wondering from a Griezmann perspective is, might we see him in this slightly more retreated position for Atletico a bit more going forward? Well, I mean, it's quite, you don't want to extrapolate too much from World Cup performances, right? We know how this is, how to fail at the transfer market, for example.
El Hadji
Amongst many others, yeah. But maybe a kind of more retreated position might be the
Diouf.
future for Griezmann in club football. So now that his clause has been all settled with the 60-minute clause with Atletico Madrid.
So I think on the first question that I have read rumors that Deschamps wants to stay until 2024 and he might extend his contract. He's obviously got a very good relationship with annoying slash disgraced president Nigel Payet. He needs to answer for a lot of more serious questions about what's happening in the Federation. And so apparently he might be looking to extend. I mean, I think if I were Deschamps, but then this man is a serial winner, right? But if I were Deschamps, if he wins on Sunday, where else are you going to need this? Where else are you going to need France? You've already achieved the unachievable. So I think that's sort of the answer to the first question. I think the real answer to the first question is he'll get to do whatever the F he wants for the foreseeable future. And I think even if things go downhill, I would like to think about that people will have a understanding that if things go wrong, he will not get such a bad reaction. But people are idiots. So, on the second question, can he return to club football? He's 54. He's very young.
That's crazy,
He has shown, like we've said, that he can deliver it. He did well at Monaco. He did well at Juve. He did well for Marseille. And again, he might be wanting to prove himself again to lay those doubts, whatever those are, to rest. I think if he were to move back to club football, he's smart enough that he would look for a stable environment and a relationship with a president at the club who's going to be backed by whoever the shareholders are or whoever the owner is. And so that's qu relatively difficult to choose. I would like to think if I were to put money on it, if he's going to go back to club football, he would go back to Juventus because I think he
I
feels
like your thinking,
like
Beppo.
he's
I
got a
like
little bit of
that,
unfinished history there. Because he took them when they were in Serie B,
and to
right?
the title
Yeah.
comfortably.
In difficult circumstances. Obviously, the quality of the players was amazing, but I think everything that was going on behind the scenes was terrible. And he spent a long time there as a player and he has a real affiliation to the club. So that's where I would put my money if you were asking me to bet now. And then to Griezmann, who knows what the future holds for him at Atletico. Certainly, I think Simeone would have looked at what's happened at the World Cup with real interest. The question mark, obviously, I think for Griezmann and his manager is a lot easier to buy in to this change of position in this role when you've got a maximum of seven games for your country and it's the highest stage. It's the biggest stage. And I say this even though the running thread about Griezmann's career has been humility, discipline, willingness to work with his managers and to listen to instructions and to take on the ethos of his manager. But it's a lot harder to ask that of a player at 31 after all he's achieved and to say, you know what, when we're going to go play Cadiz, you're going to play in that
But the
role.
thing, and the other thing, of course, is they often play with just a two in the middle, right? Which kind of complicates the situation quite a bit. But either way, I'm pretty sure he would have a better stab at it than Wayne Rooney ever did, for example.
But also, I think, question mark for somebody like Griezmann is if France ends up winning the World Cup at 31, does he decide to stay? Or does he leave on a high like somebody like Deschamps did, in 2000? Or somebody like, Zidane could have maybe had a few more years. I mean, I know he was 34, but certain players like that stopped at a time when they could have maybe had, we all remember the likes of Deschamps and Blanc finishing in 2000. The likes of Desailly dragged on till 2004. They tarnished it tarnished a little bit their legacy. So how will he be thinking about his future with France, if whether they win it or not?
And at the same time, as you say, the next Euro is really just around the corner. So it doesn't seem that far away. But anyway, Beppe, that's been fascinating getting through your
Yeah, that's
career
fun.
and these wonderful kind of wonderful manager and player who I think have been so intertwined for France over the almost the past decade. I mean, it's not, it will be that, no, come Euro 2024 if they're both there. But in the meantime, I guess we're wishing luck to Les Bleus
Yeah, I
on
need to.
Sunday. Let's hope we see a great final. Beppo, it's been a pleasure, and we'll be back on this classic soon. So this has been Le Classique, and this has been our preview of the final on Sunday between Les Bleus and Argentina.